This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about something with widespread health implications. And those of you who are parents or grandparents, listen up, because this may be a particular concern to you. Today we're going to talk to the author of a book entitled Glow Kids, How Screen Addiction is Hijacking Our Kids and How to Break the Trance. The author, our guest today, is Dr. Nicholas Carderis. He's a clinical assistant professor at Stony Brook University's Health Sciences Center, and he's an adjunct faculty member at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, and author of a previous book, How Plato and Pythagoras Can Save Your Life. Boy, I'd like to interview you on that one, but our subject today is screen addiction, because we're in a changing environment when it comes to especially our kids. Dr. Carderis is a specialist in the treatment of addiction, and it's come to his attention that there's a whole new way that people are becoming powerfully addicted, and that is via our electronic media. So welcome to Intelligent Medicine.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure. So how is it that you got onto this? Because you see patients as a psychologist. You're a PhD, professor in the field of psychology, and you work one-on-one with patients who are hooked on various substances, the traditional substances, of course, drugs, alcohol, and so on. Addiction treatment is a subspecialty of psychology. And so how is it that you got onto this phenomenon? When did this become clear to you?
Right. So I wear a couple of different professional hats, and one of them is a director of a rehab called the Dunes in East Hampton, New York, and another one, and that's drug and alcohol addiction. But another one of my professional hats is I was doing a lot of mental health work for school districts, and in that capacity, I had seen over 1,000 teenagers over the last 13, 14 years for various disorders, behavioral, clinical, psychiatric issues. And my first aha moment was just about 10 years ago. I had a young man that was referred to me who was essentially having an episode of video game psychosis. He had been playing a game called World of Warcraft, which is sort of a mythology-based archetypal type of a game. And he'd been playing for 10 to 12 hours a day, and when by the time he was sent to my office, couldn't discern what was real or what wasn't, was suffering from what we call derealization, and didn't know if he was in the game or not. In fact, he was looking around my office and blinking his eyes, and when I asked him if he knew where he was, he asked me, is this still the game? And that was my first sort of aha moment that this is, I had been used to dealing with those kind of psychotic, substance-induced psychotic episodes with people that had done anything from angel dust or cocaine, but I'd never seen anybody lose touch with reality because of a video game immersion. And that was when I first sort of realized that we might have a new type of escape, a new type of a drug.
And so you actually made a controversial statement that you feel that this type of addiction is as powerful as a substance addiction, that it's comparable biochemically, neurologically to heroin or cocaine. Because it really mirrors some of the same physiologic changes that occur with drugs.
Well, that's really unquestionable at this point, because over the last four or five years, has been a whole host of brain imaging research studies that have shown this. They've shown this literally in black and white. MRI studies that have looked at the brains of people who had been screen addicts and the brains of people who had opiate addiction and also people that had cocaine addiction. And the effects, the side-by-side MRIs looked exactly the same. They affected the frontal cortex primarily. So we saw that what was gray matter shrinkage of the frontal cortex, and the frontal cortex is the executive functioning part of the brain, as you know, and it's the part of the brain that correlates to impulsivity and correlates to disorders like ADHD and addiction disorders. So chronic drug addicts have compromised frontal cortexes as a byproduct of their drug addiction, and now we were seeing some of the brain imaging studies that were showing that these brains of screen addicts were also similarly being literally neurologically changed. The other brain imaging studies also showed that the myelin sheath, that the white matter of the brain, the connectivity of the brain, was also being compromised. And again, Dr. Bartzokis was a neurologist at UCLA that originally did this myelin sheath research on drug addiction in the late 1990s. And he saw that chronic drug addiction made the myelin sheath more brittle. It made it more compromised. And initially his study was with cocaine addicts, and that study was replicated with screen addicts a couple of years ago, and it showed the exact same myelin effects as well. And the compromised myelin sheath means a slower brain. It's essentially the bandwidth of our brain, and if that gets affected, then how effectively our brain works is also compromised. And then the third component that mirrored drug addiction was the dopaminergic effect, how dopamine activating, and as some of our listeners may know, dopamine is the feel-good neurotransmitter that is really closely involved in the addiction dynamics. When somebody experiences something that feels good, dopamine gets released, and then there's what's called the dopamine reward loop. People then tend to chase that dopamine release, and there was, again, one powerful study that showed that screen experiences and video games were as dopamine activating as sex. And sex is 100% dopamine activating, and these video games were 100% dopamine activating. And my takeaway from that was, while adults may have the impulse control to engage in, let's call it sexually arousing material, and maybe be able to control their impulsivity, we hope, a 7-year-old isn't neurologically equipped to be so stimulated to effectively have what I call a digital brain orgasm, and then moderate that for 10 minutes a day. It's just too stimulating for their brain because they don't have a fully developed frontal cortex, so they don't have the impulse control to moderate that kind of activity.
So really, in effect, what we're talking about is a digital crack, something that has an equivalent neurological and physiological impact.
Well, Dr. Peter Weibrow, who's the head of neurology, or head of neuroscience, rather, at UCLA, was the first that I heard to use that, called it electronic cocaine. And Chinese researchers started calling it digital heroin because of these effects that we just discussed.
How is this different from our generation, my generation perhaps, where we were weaned on TV. TV was an emerging phenomenon when I was a kid, and we spent hours and hours glued in front of the TV. Is this an order of magnitude different? Is this a higher level of engagement than just the regular two-dimensional TV screen?
Than the old boob tube.
Yeah.
I was a TV baby, too. I'm 52, and I was raised on television as well. And we are seeing that the effects are qualitatively different, primarily for two reasons. This generation of screen technology is interactive and immersive in a way that television never was. Television was passive stimulation, so you would sit and you would watch a television screen, but this generation of screen media pulls you in and interacts with you in a way that makes it much more impactful on the brain. And so Dr. Dimitri Christakis at the University of Washington had done the first ADHD research on television back in 1990. And he had found that, yeah, television does have an effect. It was every hour of screen time between the ages of 2 and 6, you had a 10% higher rate of ADHD as the child grew older. So 3 hours of television equaled 30% higher rate of ADHD. He repeated that work in 2010 with a tablet. And as you said, it was amplified, the effect was amplified to a much higher level because the interactive screens had that more powerful effect than our TVs of yesteryear.
So we're also seeing a trend towards ever more immersive media, like 3D virtual reality, ever higher definition games with really realistic scenarios that are truly immersive. Do you see this potentially getting worse and worse?
Absolutely. I quite honestly, I stay up at nights worried of if two-dimensional screens have had such an addicting and powerful effect, and again, I've worked with, like I said, 1,000 teenagers over the last 13 years, and quite a few of them. The first young man that I'd mentioned that had that video game psychotic episode, he needed a psychiatric hospitalization for a month to get retethered to reality and to get stabilized. And I've since worked with a whole host of young people who've had everything from basic video game addiction to aggression, mood dysregulation, different types of clinical effects. But the virtual reality and augmented holographic reality is a magnitude beyond what we've seen yet. And I have one young man who's 18 years old who I really like. He's a very articulate gamer. He's an advocate of gaming culture, and he's a good advocate for it. He this is my generation's thing, was similar to maybe prior generations sports or other activities. And he put on a virtual reality headset a couple of months ago for the first time and played his game. His game was a team game called League of Legends, and he came back to me and said, "Oh my god, that was too powerful." I know I've been advocating for video games for the last 4 years with you, but I just tried this virtual reality game and I am scared what that might do to people. And this was from out of the mouths of a pretty seasoned video gamer.
Yeah.
So I'm afraid that we're going to become such an escapist culture. And, the other thing that I've seen, Ron, that is really troubling with young people, because I've seen it change and get worse year by year with each cohort of young people. Such hyper-stimulating screen exposure desensitizes young people. There was an educator, Dr. Monkey. Dr. Monkey talked about how screen technologies compress and accelerate time. And so kids become very impatient and bored with real life. Digital life can be so overwhelming. I mean, if you're playing one of these games, or you're a first-person shooter, and you're in a combat situation, or if you're playing an archetypal game, or you're conquering universes, and life is going very fast, and the games are so stimulating, then all of a sudden to ask those young kids to sit quietly in the classroom, or to go on a walk, or to walk on the beach, or to go fishing, real-life experiences are dwarfed by the digital experiences. And so I see a whole generation of young people who have become more bored and apathetic with real life experiences because of the hyper arousal of the digital experiences. They're like, that's boring. That doesn't excite me, because they've been titillated almost cradle to high school.
Right. As a previous generation might have said, how do you keep them down on the farm after they've seen Gay Paris? That was just a mere blip on the radar screen, predicting the kind of hyperstimulation that would occur in the 21st century. That was the beginning of the 20th century. What about withdrawal? Because a hallmark of addiction is withdrawal. Do you actually see symptoms of withdrawal? The kind of irritability, the kind of very severe physiological dependency that can occur with drugs.
Yes. Yeah. The answer is yes. That's been chronicled fairly extensively. And I've had clients firsthand that I could tell you. In the addiction treatment field, we used to have an old saying: don't get between an addict and their drug of choice, because addicts will get violent and aggressive if you try to get in between their high. And so we've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of episodes of kids who have gotten very aggressive, mood dysregulated, and potentially violent when their drug of choice, their Xbox, is taken away, or where their their game or their screen was taken away. There's over a dozen cases in the United States of teenage boys primarily, who have committed either matricide or patricide because of their games being taken away, mm-hmm. Killed their mothers or their fathers. The most high-profile one was Dan Petrick in Ohio in 2007, and this was profiled on 60 Minutes, but this was a quote-unquote good boy who had never had any issues before and killed his mother and shot his father. His father survived, but this is because they took away his Xbox. I've had clients, a couple in New Jersey, who very lovely people, who coincidentally happen to be graphic web designers, and their daughter, in this case, wasn't video games. The daughter was given a Chromebook by her school, and the Chromebook had embedded in it certain chat room options. And so this all-American girl who had been a soccer player, sweet girl by all accounts, who was 12, started chatting with strange men in strange parts of the country, but became very addicted to that, and became addicted to a game called Squirrelaxy. And when her father attempted to take away her Chromebook about 4 months into this spiraling use of her computer, and this, by the way, after the school told them not to worry, and then they gave him some software that was supposed to be a block on some of those chat rooms, mm-hmm. which the father said were totally ineffective, he took away her Chromebook, and she violently and viciously attacked him. She bit into his arm, tore flesh, and had to be psychiatrically hospitalized, and then had a repeat of that about 2 weeks later, when again she was released from the psychiatric hospital, and again she had her computer taken away. She attacked her parents, and this was a girl that, by all accounts, had never shown any aggression or any kinds of, but couldn't stand to be without her, and became violent when she was without her drug. We've seen young people, because the protocol for treating is doing what we call a digital detox. And we've seen that the first 24 to 48 hours that people who are screen addicted go through a quote-unquote digital detox, they are very irritable and mood dysregulated and combustible, and go through, sometimes they'll report physiological symptoms, you know, upset stomachs and headaches and similar kinds of withdrawals that we see with substance addiction.
Taking slightly the devil's advocate position, I recently got together with classmates that I went to college with, and one of my classmates, who I remember was particularly good at pinball, mechanical pinball, very, very primitive, gaming compared to what kids experience now. He was really a pinball wizard. He became a great heart surgeon, and I reminded him how great he was at pinball, and they said that was probably great preparation for your career in heart surgery. Is it possible that some of these skills that kids are acquiring in the digital realm may be the skills of the future? Skills, for example, in laparoscopic surgery, robotic surgery, or to become a drone pilot or an air traffic controller of the future? Because, it's a digital world. Even wars are going to be fought from distant bunkers where, robots and drones will clash.
Well, that's an interesting point, and the military is all over that already. The military has, in many of the recruitment centers, they have essentially video arcades.
Right.
I've had young people who've gone to these recruitment centers, and they sort of simulate. They'll have like a tank simulation and a fighter pilot simulator, which is effectively a video game, as they kind of try to blur that video game experience with the real thing. And you're right. There is some research that shows the only benefit that we've seen from screen immersion or video games is increased hand-eye coordination. So, and there was the one brain study in I don't remember which journal it was in, and one of the peer-reviewed journals did show that the parts of the brain that really help us with hand-eye coordination can benefit from video game playing. Similarly, like you were saying with your friend who became the pinball wizard. But it did also show that those same researchers, it was at the Journal of Biology, I believe it was, but they also said that, unfortunately, while they showed an increase in some hand-eye coordination in parts of the brain related to hand-eye coordination, there was also some activation in the parts of the brain related to addiction and impulse disorders. And so I, in my book, I talk about looking at it as a pretty, as a cost-benefit proposition. Okay, if I'm a father of 9-year-old kids, do I want them engaging in something that might increase their hand-eye coordination while it might also be a potential Pandora's box for other types of clinical disorders? Because we have seen now over several hundred studies that have correlated excessive screen usage to not just screen addiction, but ADHD, increased aggression, depression, anxiety. And the one that a lot of people are shocked about are the psychotic-like effects, mm-hmm. which two researchers have dubbed game transfer phenomenon. We've seen that kids who are very immersed in their screen experiences oftentimes start blurring those experiences with reality. And this is fairly common.
Right.
This is the full-blown psychosis of my client is much more rare, obviously, but much more common are the game transfer phenomenon is when a video gamer, days after they've stopped playing the game, they will have intrusive thoughts, sights, sounds, smells of the game. So they'll hear gunfire or they'll see images of the game pop up in front of them. I've had 8-year-olds who play Minecraft. I don't know if you're familiar with Minecraft. Minecraft is a cube world that's been analogized as sort of digital Lego. But I've had 8-year-olds who begin to see the world in cubes when they wake up in the morning and they've had Minecraft dreams and then they see things in cube forms for a few minutes. In the late 1990s, at Harvard, they did some studies where they called it the Tetris effect. And the Tetris effect...
Very simple,
again,
primitive game compared to our current games. Yeah.
Right. It was the little square Tetraminos. And people would report seeing the little square Tetraminos in the corner of their visual, the periphery of their visual field. And these were college-age students who said that this went on for years and that they would see the squares in their dreams and in their waking moments. This kind of digital exposure, it seems to have a very serious effect on our psyche, much more so than television had. You know, the devil's advocates that I talk to will say, well, look, if I read a book, I might see images of that book in my mind's eye, and I might, imagine aspects of a book. It doesn't mean the book makes me psychotic, but we're seeing that modern-day screens have a much more powerful effect than just something like a book where you're using your active imagination to visualize things. This is actually programming the imagery into your mind's eye, and that seems to have a much more pervasive effect.
There actually is an even more serious consequence, because rarely, but this has been documented, there have been cases of digital deaths. Kids mm-hmm. who've been gaming, and literally had cardiac arrest due to some form of extreme exhaustion. That's a rare phenomenon, but it's pervasive, especially in the Orient, in Asia.
In the Orient, right, there are cases of that. You know, we all remember the addiction studies of the 1950s where the mouse would keep ingesting cocaine and wouldn't eat and drink and would die eventually.
Mm-hmm.
It's not dissimilar. It's fairly common for gamers to go on 3-4 day gaming marathons and not be able to stop. If you Google World of Warcraft and diapers, you'll see entire chat rooms devoted to World of Warcraft enthusiasts who talk about the diapers that they'll wear because they won't and can't take bathroom breaks because they can't pull themselves away from the screen during a quote-unquote raid during the game.
Hmm.
And so they'll wear adult diapers, they'll pee in jars. That's how powerful the addictive pull of the game is. They won't even go to the bathroom.
Wow.
So
pretty extreme. All right, so we've laid out some of the perils, some of the dangers associated with this mm-hmm. Phenomenon. The book is Glow Kids, and, you know, that evokes an image of a kid peering into a screen. How screen mm-hmm. addiction is hijacking our kids and how to break the trance. This is part one of our discussion. In part two, with Dr. Nicholas Carderas, I'd like to talk about potential solutions. Is it too late to put the genie back into the bottle? Or can we turn back the tide on what may be an epidemic of digital addiction. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.